This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 12th day of June 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Ben Pruce should join us from the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons, and we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey, Prairie Research Institute will be here. We'll hear all about the Ag News for the day, including information out of Washington, D.C. within the last hour. The Trade Promotion Authority has failed in the House of Representatives. And that all happens during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up trading for this week. July contract on a Friday afternoon in the corn pit was 3.5 cents lower, that at $3.53. September futures are down 4.25 at 3.58¾, and December corn at 4¾ lower, 3.69½. The final trade there, the March contract on a settlement price down 4¾ at 3.81. May futures 3.88¼, the settlement price 4½ cents lower. Soybeans July contract unchanged to 940, the settlement price. August contract down a penny and a quarter at 921½, and September 3¾ lower, 907½, the settlement price. November beans 4½ cents lower at 904¼. January down 4¼ at 911½, and next year's July down 4 cents at 923½. Bean meal finished $4 higher at 317.40. Bean oil 15 cents lower at 33.14. Chicago soft red winter wheat down 0.5 cent at 503¾. The hard red July 2 at 2¾ higher, 526, the settlement price there. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished up like this. Actually, they're still trading on the Globex, down 2½ cents. That's $2.62½ at 152.60. In the June contract, August feeders at $2.05 lower, 224.20, and the lean hogs down a dime, or rather up a dime, at $81.47½. That, of course, for 100 pounds. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Checking the outside markets, crude oil at $59.98 a barrel, down 79 cents. Ethanol at $1.47 and 8 cents, a penny and 3 cents lower. Gasoline on the RBOB, or wholesale price, is up $2.12. Trading at $2.12. That's a penny and 8 tenths of a cent lower. In diesel fuel, 3 2/10 of a cent lower at $1.88 and 8 tenths. Natural gas is 7 2/10 of a cent lower at $2.75 and 3 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, 170 points lower at 17,873 at this hour. The dollar is unchanged at 94.98, and gold futures down $1.25, $1,179.25 for a troy ounce. Let's check the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Showers and thunderstorms set at 60% coverage tonight. They'll continue mainly before 8 p.m., mostly cloudy, a low of 65. Winds could gust as high as 20 out of the west-northwest, steady at 5 to 14. Chance of precipitation remains at 60%. And then this evening, or rather tomorrow, a 30% chance of rainfall before 2 in the afternoon, mostly cloudy, high of 85 degrees. Winds will turn to the east at 6 to 9, and then Saturday night, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, and a low of about 70. Winds out of the south by Saturday evening at 7 to 9 miles an hour. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for a Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is with us. He's at Atchison, Kansas, and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Thanks, Mike, for being with us again this afternoon. Always look forward to our conversations on Friday afternoon. What was the end of the trade day and, more importantly, the end of the trade week like for you?
Interesting dynamic at midday, Todd. The wheat came in making new highs. The weather for the midday models looked even wetter for a larger area of the southern plains the next 5 days. But we actually turned negative, and I think you could put probably a 60-minute chart up against the news breaking that Egypt once again purchased the wheat from Russia and Romania at right around $200 a ton, cost and freight included. And that was the second time this week. And then we also got news that the failure of the TPP, the Asian trade bill, went down in the House of Representatives. And so I felt like that when those two pieces of news broke, there was kind of a concerted effort in the grain market that the trade essentially went back to saying grain demand is falling now just as much as the supply, so there's really no need to put any kind of weather premium in the market yet going into a very wet wheat and soybean weekend and early next week. So the commodity index buy signal that you and I have been talking about for 2 to 3 weeks now has stalled for a second week in a row, and so we're in, I want to say, kind of in a sideways mindset until more is known about the supply, and that's going to come probably on the heels of the crop conditions report Monday afternoon.
So is there a suggestion here that you just simply swapped out the risk premium potential for the fundamentals that said, hey, wait a second, we didn't get another sale to Egypt. It went someplace else, and they simply swapped it out, and it was kind of an even to slightly bearish fundamental prospect in that form. Is that right?
Yeah, perfectly said. I think that's really what the market is looking at right now because, quite frankly, the Wednesday report set us up for any bad demand news being probably more bearish than what it would have normally been because they did find so much more supply in feed grains. I mean, we didn't talk about it much this morning, but when you look at wheat and coarse grains, in both of them included, and that obviously includes corn, we had about 5.5 million more metric tons, or about 200 million more bushels put on the statistics and on the tables on Wednesday's report, whereas the oil seeds, and this I'm talking production here, oil seed production, including soybeans, went down 1.2 million tons, or around 44 million bushels. And so you really went into the last half of the week limping from a standpoint that the USDA sees more supplies than they saw before the report came out, and very converse or opposite to the pre-report fears about an El Nino really curbing production. I mean, that was on the front page of the Financial Times on Wednesday morning, was about a global drought because of El Nino being the worst since 1997. And so very contrasting view there, and USDA clearly won out. So when you throw out that Egyptian wheat tender twice in 1 week and we didn't get any business and it was still running around $200 a ton, I don't think the longs want to even test the waters at this point because of the fact that the supplies are still uncertain at this stage.
So farmers are looking at it, a crop, most of them at this point, saying, hey, wait a second, this crop looks pretty good. Although there is a large swath, I think, in along Peoria, all the way through probably Lafayette, Indiana, and maybe into that area that is really wet. Of course, just to the north of us, starting in Rantoul and Fisher along the highway there. But is it big enough to really make a difference? And maybe only if it continues to rain. So I'm thinking that farmers are looking at a good crop, and they keep thinking that this is stuttering towards higher prices. But every time they think there might be another set of higher prices, something comes up. and either holds it down or sideways.
Yeah, good crop on big old crop inventories, and so you make baby steps at this stage of the game until you build your demand, and I think these come at the same time, you get that technical buy signal. And why do we keep talking about this technical buy signal in these commodity index charts? Well, because the Bloomberg Grain Commodity Index chart back in October rallied from low to high about 25%. If we just got a 10% rally and beans felt that 10% rally impact 100%, it's a 90-cent rally in beans potentially. And so you really don't want to ignore the potential for a technical buy signal in these indexes. And I think you hit a nail on the head about what did this week show us. Well, the spread showed us a lot. We had a July D's corn spread, had the best price since May 29th at 16.5 cents on a carrying charge. July no beans even did better, a positive 36.25 cent close. Inverted market still, best price since the end of February. I think it's real important next week we watch the Decatur basis for both corn and meal. Corn basis in Decatur was around 11 cents today. For the meal, it was around $18 a ton. If these weather issues become more dominant, and kind of what the market flagged to me today by the spread trade, we may see the cash market and the basis market really pick up if these rains come through.
So they would do the heavy lifting. Will it be an opportunity then for producers to price out, do you suppose?
I don't know that, but I think it brings the lows up. In other words, we don't need to go below those old lows of 360. I mean, we're 364, okay. 365. That's probably the first thing that we have to look at is, okay, we got pretty doggone close this week at the end of the week to those old lows in D's corn. Do we need to go through those? I would say if the spreads and the basis wake up next week because of the rains, no, we don't need to do too much more than maybe a couple cents through them or something like that.
But usually it's the futures that are working that process, not the cash side that's working that.
You're right, unless the spreads kick into gear. And I think that's where the cash and the futures are most come together most often is, like we saw in 2012, and like we saw in early 2013, the July D's corn spread, the July Nove bean spreads, those really kicked into gear and really brought the futures market back around to a wake-up call that we've got some supply issues on our hands, or we've got too tight of supplies and the demand's not being tapered enough.
Okay, since we've been doing this since January, where do we just stand on your 2010 analogous year?
We're about a penny and a half off on the D's corn. We were at 371 on June 11th of 2010 on the close, but we were headed higher, and the same with beans. We were at 909 and a quarter, about a nickel or so away from where we were earlier this week, but we were headed higher at this point. So while the corn and bean prices are almost identical still in the new crop, the trend with 2010 has begun to shift because of this report this week. The report this week back in 2010 started to kick into gear, and we were heading higher. So that's the major difference to report this week versus last week.
Yeah, and last week, if I remember correctly, you were thinking this was going to shift a little, at least as late as last week, that this was going to shift potentially a little later into the summer.
Yeah, and I think that's still the case. And you know what, the biggest negative for me on my desk after this week's report was on 2010 in the June report, USDA took world-ending stocks of wheat down about 4.1 million tons. We only lost about 1 million tons this week on the June report, and so the wheat continues to limp, and I really wanted to see a lot more than that. So that's where I'm hoping these rains wake up the market to the fact that we probably don't have the supply and the production globally and in the U.S., and we get back on track here relatively soon.
Anything out of the livestock sector for the day?
You know, I am not buying into the break in the fat cattle. I think it was who was going to blink first, the feedlots or the short-bought packers, and it seemed like the Nebraska feedlots jumped at $152. That's $3 less than last week, and it kind of just took the fat cattle into a tailspin. So with the box beef holding up pretty nicely, slaughter levels very, very tight, I'm going to say that it looks like to me we could have a bounce back in the fat cattle led by the cash next week, so I'll be watching for that.
And as you look forward to next week, what things do producers need to watch and be wary of? I am going to guess that crop progress report on Monday afternoon begins to be really important.
Yeah, it really does. The crop progress report on Monday afternoon, I want that to ignite the cash basis into that, and then that to start to show up in the spreads even more in the central part of the country. I don't look for the rivers to do much for us because they'll probably be flooded and actually back off in terms of wanting corn and beans and wheat next week.
Too early to talk to you about your acreage expectations. Have you developed numbers yet?
I'm going to stay with where I'm at this point, Todd. I don't see any real need to change at this stage of the game until we get another 2 weeks down the road to get an idea of what actually prevent plant-wise is in play for the soybeans, because I'm, like I said this morning, I don't want to farm out my back door, but we're not going to get hardly anything done the next 10 days, and that'll put us right into prevent plant around the 20th, 25th, and I think some parts of Kansas go all the way to the 30th, but most of Missouri and the Corn Belt in Kansas will be the 20th and 25th.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. Have a nice weekend.
Oh, you too. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting. I want to point you to the Farm Doc Daily website. Go there shortly if you can. There's a new article posted by John Newton about those crop progress reports. You've heard me talk about that 18 million acres that has not been planted yet for soybeans. He details that a bit, what has been and is left to be planted for corn. It's a really great article. John Newton wrote it. It's up on the Farm Doc Daily website. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Topping today's agricultural news, TPA, Trade Promotion Authority, or Fast Track, failed in the House of Representatives today only because the Trade Adjustment Act failed. The House of Representatives actually passed the TPA portion of the bill, 219 to a 211, but since Fast Track and Trade Adjustment were parts of the same bill, neither provision proceeds toward enactment. If House leaders were to bring the trade adjustment part of that act up again in coming days, approval could move forward for TPA. The American Farm Bureau's analysis of VOTUS, or the Waters of the U.S. rule, finds the final rule to be worse than EPA's original proposal. American Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman says the conclusions are sobering. The rule would give the EPA and the Corps of Engineers, he says, the power to determine what falls under the regulation via remote desktop applications without ever stepping foot on the land in question. Farm Bureau is now calling on lawmakers to intervene to stop the rule. AFBF's findings are online at fbnews.fb.org. And finally, this little tidbit. The comment period is now open for the Environmental Protection Agency's Renewable Fuel Standard proposal. The National Corn Growers Association is calling on its members to submit comments on the proposal. NCGA President Chip Bowling, for his part, says the new EPA proposal means lower corn prices and ethanol plant and industry cutbacks. The comment period is open through the 27th day of July. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On the subject of the RFS, while the EPA's proposal was tough on corn-based ethanol, that was not the case for biodiesel made primarily from soybeans. The nation, in fact, could be running on a whole lot more biodiesel in the future. If the biodiesel parts of the proposal were approved, it could firmly set the nation on a path to create a second biofuels industry right here in the United States. The United States Environmental Protection Agency, by the authority of Congress, sets mandates within some congressional parameters for the amount of renewable energy the nation should consume. Part of this energy plan has allowed U.S. farmers to build and deploy corn-based ethanol as a gasoline additive. Phase 2, as set out by Congress and proposed by EPA in May, may do the same thing for biodiesel made from oil seeds, says University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin.
If one takes the EPA policy as given and projects it for the remaining life of the RFS through 2022, essentially going forward, biodiesel is in the driver's seat rather than corn-based ethanol.
Biodiesel is made mostly from vegetable oils, essentially the same cooking oils found on store shelves. Mostly this oil is pressed from the soybean. The new proposed rules, which again follow the direction of Congress to make the United States less dependent on foreign oil for its energy supply, would push U.S. vegetable oil crushing capacity to its limit.
U.S. EIA estimates that current production capacity for biodiesel in the U.S. is around 2.3 billion gallons. And there's a good chance that by 2016 or 2017, we would go past that number.
Maybe or maybe not, depending on how much soybean oil crushing capacity currently idled can be brought back online, and or how much biodiesel can be imported to meet the mandate. Either way, it's clear more biodiesel made from soybeans and some other crops is now coming into play. The big difference may be that there is already an existing infrastructure to handle most of the increase. The ethanol industry had to be built and deployed. Farmers took on that burden. The oilseed crushing industry already exists and simply needs to be targeted.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And now for something completely different, especially if you've got windbreaks on the farm that are made up of spruce trees, something with a small needle, or junipers, or any of those sorts of shrubs that bagworms happen to infest. It's probably time to take a look at them and decide whether or not you should treat those bagworms. Bagworms are caterpillars that commonly live in groups. These groups are not colonies. The worms just live near each other. Honestly, bagworms live in little silk tents. They haul these tents, bags, around with them. The tents are camouflaged with pieces of leaves, says University of Illinois Extension entomologist Phil Nixon.
Being detached pieces of foliage, these will dry up and turn brown relatively quickly. We see bagworms primarily as a problem on needled evergreen trees, primarily junipers, including eastern red cedar, arborvitae, and eastern white pine. Particularly in the northern half of the state, that's where what we see it almost exclusively on. In the southern half of Illinois, we see it not only on those plants, but also will get on deciduous trees.
It is very common to find bagworms on oak trees, maple trees, and crab apples in the southern half of Illinois. Bagworms, they're pretty easy to spot.
So what you end up seeing is a spindle-shaped bag up to an inch and a half long that is dark-colored, and an actively feeding bagworm is always getting larger, and so it's always putting new foliage at the top of the bag. So an actively feeding caterpillar will have green foliage at the top of the bag. That's one way you can tell whether it's actually in a controllable state with an insecticide.
Bagworms start at the top of the trees and work down. They strip the leaves as they go. Normally, this kills the parts of the tree that have had the leaves, the needles, eaten away. It is best to treat for bagworms in June and July, says Nixon.
We look at controlling these insects through applications primarily of Bacillus thuringiensis kirstaki, sold as Dipel, Thuricide, and other brand names. And these, when they're ingested by the caterpillar, will kill the caterpillar, and you'll know that they are dead because the tops of the bags are all brown after about a week.
The older the caterpillar gets, the harder it is to kill. Bagworms stop feeding in August, and essentially their tent becomes a cocoon. Treating then won't do any good, and the bag, well, it's all brown by then because the caterpillar has stopped feeding. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. In just a couple minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Peanut Butter Cookie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1897, Carl Elsner patented the Swiss Army knife. The original was called a soldier's knife. It had a wooden handle and featured a cutting blade, a screwdriver, a can opener, and a punch. Elsner was not happy with his original design, and after 5 years of experimentation, he managed to put blades on both sides of the handle using a special spring mechanism. He added a second cutting blade and a corkscrew. Today, you can get the Swiss Army knife with a laser pointer and a detachable USB flash drive. In 2004, a federal judge upheld a rule issued by USDA, which declared that frozen batter-coated French fries are fresh vegetables. The judge stated that the term fresh vegetables was ambiguous. By the way, in 1981, USDA tried to classify ketchup and pickle relish as vegetables so that schools could cut out a serving of cooked or fresh vegetables from hot lunch program child nutrition requirements. The idea was met with public outrage, and USDA ended up with ketchup on its face. The plan was never implemented. And in 2007, a number of international organizations joined in Rome to sign a document pledging to work against child labor in agriculture. Worldwide, agriculture is the sector where the largest share of working children is found. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week. That's up next, in fact, on many of these radio stations online already at WILLAG.org. Our guest this week as panelist included Ray Jenkins of the Eddyville, Iowa corn milling facility that belongs to Cargill, also along for the ride. Bill Mayer, he's with Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, and Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what happened in the world of agricultural trade. It's up on our website, due up on our radio stations next or tomorrow morning. Be sure that you take a listen. It is a great program, Commodity Week at WILLAG.org. Now up next, Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute is here with a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. June so far has been 0.7 degrees above average and very wet in many areas. Rain amounts between 4 to 6 inches occurred near Galena, between the Quad Cities and Peoria area, and east of Champaign. Much of the rest of the state has received 2 to 4 inches. However, there are some areas south of Carbondale that have received less than an inch of rain. Will the heavy rains continue? According to the National Weather Service, there are strong chances of rain every day across Illinois until at least Saturday of next week. Even the 8 to 14 day forecast that extends out to June 25th shows Illinois and the Midwest with above average rainfall. The potential rainfall amounts over the next week are substantial. Central Illinois could see between 4 to 6 inches of rain, while the northern third of the state could see 2 to 4 inches. The southern third of Illinois could see 1 to 3 inches. The reason for this rain is that a somewhat stationary front is sitting over Illinois and will remain over the next week. Rain will continue to develop along that front. Temperatures over the next week will range from the upper 70s and the low 80s in northern Illinois and in the low to mid 80s in central and southern Illinois. The dew point temperatures will range from the 60s in the northern part of the state to the low to mid 70s in central and southern Illinois. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Just a quick reminder of some of the places you might check out over the weekend online for all kinds of interesting information from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. As it relates to agriculture, the College of Aces website, just search for College of Aces, A-C-E-S, in Google, or you can go to the bulletin. That'll bring you to all the information about weeds and weed scientists, entomology, insects, and what's been happening in your fields as it relates to agricultural extension and crop science. It's at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. Of course, the Farm Doc website, one of my favorites, where the Ag Economist update all kinds of information on agricultural economics, and they did a great job in this past week on the Farm Doc Daily website. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.